All right, let's all take our Bibles and open to 2 Samuel. We're going to be in chapter 15 tonight, starting down at verse number 13. We're going to begin talking about the exile of David. And of course, in our study of David's life, we've gotten to the point in the story where his son Absalom has conspired against him to stage a coup to try to take the throne away from King David. So Absalom, of course, had himself been exiled because of his murder of his brother, his half-brother Amnon, and eventually he was brought back into Judah and to Jerusalem, and finally made peace with the king, with King David, and then used his 4 years in Jerusalem to undermine his father's position and authority and the love of the people that they had for him. And then when he felt the time was right, he left the city and went to Hebron and staged this rebellion against David. Our story picks up in verse 13 of chapter 15, where David learns of what Absalom has done, and we begin to see his reaction to it. And I want to mention as we start here that we've talked about, you know, how there's this view of David as this terrible father and who's done all these terrible things. And David, of course, sinned. He did things that were wrong, but he's tried to make those right, and he's repented of them, and God has forgiven him of them. But the story that's usually told in the commentaries is that because David sinned with Bathsheba, God is mad at him, and so God is doing all of this to him. So David's a terrible father. He raised Absalom to be a rebel, and now because he was kind of an absentee dad and he didn't really do good toward his children, now all of his chickens are coming home to roost, and all this is coming back on David, and God is mad at David, and he's trying to discipline David, so he's going to send him away from Jerusalem and cause him to be exiled, and then eventually God will bring him back. And again, it makes, you know, for a nice story, and people use it to preach sermons, you know, on different ideas, but the Bible just doesn't really say that's what's happening here. In fact, and we'll see as we read through tonight, David doesn't think it's because he's done something wrong. He doesn't understand fully why all of this is happening, but it never causes him to lose his faith in God. And that's ultimately the point of the story. And really, what God is doing here is showing us how he kept David on the throne even when everything was against him. So I want us to keep that in mind as we go through, especially this part of the story tonight. So let's start in verse number 13 of chapter 15. The Bible says, "There came a messenger to David saying, 'The hearts of the men of Israel are after Absalom.'" So Absalom has gone off and he's started this rebellion. You remember they blew the trumpet and people in these different places around the nation all shouted that Absalom reigns in Hebron. So we have a new king. Absalom is taking over. The people didn't know what was going on. Many of the people who were with Absalom didn't know what he was doing, and they weren't expecting this. But once it started, the excitement spread. And those who agreed with Absalom, of course, went along with him, and many others chose to join in, not knowing what was happening, thinking maybe this was the best thing or whatever. So now word finally reaches David. And again, they didn't have, you know, television and telephone and all of those things, so it took time for news to travel. Word comes to David, and the message is that the whole nation, the hearts of the men of Israel, are after Absalom. So the messenger that comes to David says, the whole kingdom's turned against you. Everyone is for Absalom. Now, David doesn't have any way to verify this quickly. He can't, you know, by the time he sends someone out to Hebron and they come back with news, Absalom and his army would be at the gates of Jerusalem ready to come in and take the city. So he has to act quickly on the best information he has, you know, at the moment. And information is key. And because David doesn't know the full story, he has to act, you know, according to his best judgment, what's best for the people and what's best for the city. And that's, of course, what he's going to do. You remember back in chapter 13 in verse 30 when Absalom killed Amnon, that the messenger came to David and said, "All of your sons have been killed." And that wasn't true at all. Only one had, but the message was they all had died. And it was certainly a terrible blow to David, but it wasn't true. And so it's rumor and those kinds of things that spread around. And it's hard to find the facts, you know, very easily. So David is going to respond in a way that will give him time to find out what's really going on, how deep this conspiracy really is, you know, how strong the opposition to him is, and give him time to determine what needs to be done. And, of course, to see what God wants to be done. So in verse 14, David said unto all his servants that were with him at Jerusalem, "Arise and let us flee, for we shall not else escape from Absalom. Make speed to depart, lest he overtake us suddenly and bring evil upon us and smite the city with the edge of the sword." And the king's servants said unto the king, "Behold, thy servants are ready to do whatsoever my lord the king shall appoint." And the king went forth, and all his household after him, and the king left 10 women, which were concubines, to keep the house. And the king went forth, and all the people after him, and tarried in a place that was far off. So we find David here responding with great restraint as well as great wisdom. David, of course, is a mighty warrior, and he has a great number of servants who are loyal to him. He has the high ground. He's in the fortified position in the city that has been rebuilt and fortified with walls. David has every opportunity, you know, to stand his ground and say, "Let them come, and you know, we'll fight it out." But David doesn't want a war in the middle of Israel, you know, against his own people. He doesn't want damage to the city where he's working to build the temple. He doesn't want the danger to the people. And so instead of standing his ground and saying, "We'll just fight it out," he makes the decision that is best to protect the people, especially the people in Jerusalem, but to protect those who are loyal to him and to protect the city and to have time to find out what's really going on. So he chooses to flee. Now, if they're going to leave the city, they have to do it quickly because Absalom is coming with his force and his army, however strong they are. And so they have to move very quickly. And that's exactly what begins to happen. And you notice that the servants say to David, you know, "Whatever you want us to do, that's what we'll do." And we're going to find out that there were many people who were deeply loyal to David. And that's an important part of this story also. So David's leaving. He leaves behind 10 concubines to keep the house. But because they were concubines and they were, you know, the king's family, as it were, they were, you know, under his protection, and no one would want to harm them. So they're left behind to kind of watch over the house and the things that he has to leave behind. And then he goes, and all the people went with him. The end of verse 17 says that they tarried in a place that was far off. And that last phrase, "a place that was far off," is actually, it's two words in the Hebrew, and the idea is Beth Merchak is the word. Beth means house. And the other word has to do with the last house. And so this is a place that was some kind of landmark in Jerusalem, that when you were leaving Jerusalem to go down into the valley and cross over and go up the Mount of Olives, this was the last house. So when you got past this house, you left the city of Jerusalem. So they made it all the way out to the last house and kind of stopped there to regroup and to let everyone come by and pass by. David's going to watch all those who are with him pass before him at the last house. So it's kind of a sad statement. The last house, the last place that is technically, you know, in the city limits of Jerusalem, David stops there and stays for a while as everyone passes by, because he's leaving this city that he's fought so hard for and worked so diligently for. He has to leave it and leave it under the threat, you know, of Absalom's rebellion. So they make it to here, and we get to find out some of the people who were traveling with David. So verse 18 says, "All his servants passed on beside him, and all the Kerethites and all the Pelethites and all the Gittites, 600 men which came after him from Gath, passed on before the king." So you have two groups that are mentioned here, the Kerethites and the Pelethites. And these were men that we read about back in chapter 8 and verse 18, who were under the leadership of Benaniah. And apparently they served as David's bodyguards. So this is kind of like his secret service. These were the men who protected the king. So obviously they're loyal to him and dedicated to him, and they're going to stand by his side. But we also read here about the Gittites, which the name Gittite means that they were from Gath. So these were, and apparently the 600 men, maybe it's the whole group together, or maybe it's only referring to the Gittites. It's not really clear. But these would have been foreigners, men who were from Gath, which means they're Philistines. But they had become loyal to David. So you think about all the battles that David has fought and the victories that he's won among the Philistines, and how throughout his life he's gained a following of those who saw his character, his integrity, and of course his faithfulness to God, not just of the children of Israel, but also people from other nations round about. So there were 600, and you know, when we go back in the story, we read about David's group of 600 men who stood with him when he was fleeing from Saul, and all the way up through the time when he became king and came to Jerusalem and took it. Those were David's mighty men. So this may be a reference to them, but it demonstrates to us that they were still with David and still faithful and loyal. The point here is that these were elite soldiers. These were those who were closest to David. So they're bodyguards. They're fiercely loyal to him. They're going to protect, and they're ready to fight and die if necessary to defend their king. So he's leaving, but he's not alone. He has people on his side. Now notice in verse 19, it says, "Then said the king to Ittai, the Gittite, wherefore goest thou also with us? Return to thy place and abide with the king," meaning the new king, Absalom, "for thou art a stranger and also an exile. Whereas thou camest but yesterday, should I this day make thee go up and down with us, seeing I go whither I may? Return thou and take back thy brethren. Mercy and truth be with thee." So Ittai is apparently the leader of the Gittites. And David says to him, you know, "You're not Israelites. You're foreigners. And, you know, you've been with me for this time. But, you know, if you want to go back and, you know, stay with the new king, you're free to go." He's giving him an opportunity to avoid what they're about to embark on, another wandering in the wilderness, if you will. David having to go into hiding from place to place, and he knows that it's not easy. These men have been through it before, and he says, "If you want to go back, I understand, and I give you my blessing to do that." Not only that, but he says at the end of verse 20, "Mercy and truth be with thee." And that's mercy and truth, righteousness from God, that, you know, he asks for God's blessing upon them. And Ittai's answer is one that stands out for us in Scripture, his statement and his pledge of loyalty to David. He says, "As the Lord liveth, and as my lord the king liveth, surely in what place my lord the king shall be, whether in death or life, even there also will thy servant be." And so it reminds us of the statement in the book of Ruth, where Ruth pledges her loyalty to her mother-in-law, Naomi. "Where you go, I'll go. Where you die, I will die." Ittai says the same thing to David. "You are the king, and where you go, I'm going to go. And if it means I have to fight, then I'll fight. If it means I have to die, then I'll die. But I'm not going to be separated from my king." And this demonstrates the loyalty not only of Ittai, but of all those men who were under him, all these others who are traveling with David. And so even though there's this rebellion against him and things look dark for David, we need to understand that those who were with him were not just loyal, but they were fiercely loyal. They've been through the ringer with David. They've been through the ups and downs, and they've seen, you know, all these battles and wars that they fought together. They're going to stay by his side no matter what. But the real important thing in that statement is that Ittai says, not just as the king lives, but as Jehovah lives. Here's a man who was a Philistine from Gath who has become a believer in Jehovah. And he says, as long as Jehovah lives, I'm pledging my loyalty to him and to you, David. So David's influence was not just you know, a military influence, and people followed him because he was a good soldier or a good leader of men or a good politician or a good king, but he also had a spiritual influence. And so we see that here there are those who were idol worshipers, even Philistines, the great enemies of Israel, who have become believers in Jehovah, the one true God, through the influence of David. And I think that's an important part, not just of his character, but of how he conducted himself, that we need to remember. Again, as so many try to tell us that this is God punishing David, the Bible really is showing us something different than that being, you know, what's going on here. So Ittai says, I'm going to stay with the king. So verse 22, David said to Ittai, go and pass over, meaning go on with the rest of the crowd. And Ittai the Gittite passed over, and all his men, and all the little ones that were with him. And all the country wept with a loud voice, and all the people passed over. The king also himself passed over the brook Kidron, and all the people passed over toward the way of the wilderness. So here we find out what the Bible means when it talks about them passing over. They've come to the edge of the city of Jerusalem. Jerusalem's on a mountain, so when you leave the city, you have to go down a hill into a valley. The valley they went down into was where the brook of Kidron was located. So it's a river, or at least in the wet season, it's a river. It's what sometimes we call a wadi. They're sometimes dry, and sometimes there's water flowing in them. But they come down the mountain to this brook, and now they're going to cross. And once you cross this river, you start going up the side of another mountain. And that mountain is the Mount of Olives. So it's the same path that God's presence will take from the temple in Jerusalem when his glory leaves the temple in the book of Ezekiel and goes down the valley and up the Mount of Olives and ascends back to heaven. It's the same path that Jesus will take when he leaves Jerusalem and goes to the Mount of Olives on the night that he is betrayed and crucified. You think about David leaving the city here in shame and in sorrow, and think about Jesus coming from the Mount of Olives into Jerusalem, the triumphant entry before he's crucified. And so there are a lot of connections of what happens here in this part of the world, but it's a sad occasion to see the king of Israel, David, the greatest king of Israel, having to leave, and all the country understands it, and they're weeping and mourning over what's happening here. So even though David was told the whole nation, you know, all the hearts of the men are with Absalom, the truth is that they weren't. Many of the people were still loyal to David. So that brings us to verse 24, and the end of this chapter talks about David needing to know information about what's really going on, but he's not going to be in the city of Jerusalem, so how's he going to find out? So he sets up kind of a spy ring to be able to get information from what's happening. And the men who choose to serve David as spies and, you know, risking their lives, putting it on the line for him, are men that we need to notice who they were and what their positions were. So first of all, in verse 24, the Bible says, Lo, Zadok also, and all the Levites were with him, bearing the Ark of the Covenant of God, and they set down the Ark of God, and Abiathar went up until all the people had done passing out of the city. So we find out that the priest, Zadok, and the Levites remained loyal to David. This is important, and we're going to see, and we're even starting to see here in Absalom's rebellion, and in some ways we've seen it before, but there's already kind of this division in Israel between the tribe of Judah and Benjamin and the other 10 tribes. The people who are coming against David and trying to overthrow him mostly are from the other 10 tribes of Israel. Judah remains loyal to David. And the priests also remain loyal to David. When the kingdom divides after the reign of Solomon, it's the tribe of Judah and Benjamin and the Levites, the priests, who remain loyal to God's chosen king, Rehoboam. And it's the other 10 tribes that follow Jeroboam. So the cracks are already there in the kingdom, and you begin to see them through these stories, and this is kind of giving us a glimpse into that. But the priests remained loyal to David. And notice that they were so loyal that they brought the Ark of the Covenant out of the tabernacle, out of Jerusalem, to be with David. You remember earlier in the book of 1 Samuel how the children of Israel wanted to carry the Ark of the Covenant with them everywhere. Whenever they went into the battle, they wanted to take the Ark because they kind of came to trust in it instead of trusting in God. And it was captured by the Philistines and, you know, that whole story. And so they still kind of have that attachment to it. Maybe they were afraid of what Absalom would do to it or whatever. But they bring it out and they say, you know, this is going to go with David because he's the true king. And here's what David does. Verse 25, the king said unto Zadok, carry back the ark of God into the city. If I shall find favor in the eyes of the Lord, he will bring me again and show me both it and his habitation. But if he thus say, I have no delight in thee, behold, here am I. Let him do to me as seemeth good unto him. So David says, the ark of the covenant is not going with us. It belongs in God's house, in God's city. So David's trust, unlike so many in Israel, it wasn't in the ark, but it was in God. And he understood that God could be with him whether or not the ark was with him. So he says, take it back. It belongs in Jerusalem. And of course, they're going to do that. And he says, if I find favor in the eyes of Jehovah, then he's going to bring me back. And I'm going to come back to Jerusalem, and I'm going to see the ark again, and I'm going to see God's house again. But if not, if God doesn't delight in me, David says, then here I am, and he can do to me as he will. This does not sound like a man who's rebelling against God. It doesn't sound like a man who even thinks, you know, that God is doing this to him as a form of punishment. He doesn't understand why this is happening, but he's not blaming God for it. He's not saying, I committed sin with Bathsheba, and even though that's been 10 years ago, God's still punishing me for that sin, because that's not how God works, and that's not how God's punishment works or how God's forgiveness works. David is not making those accusations or having those thoughts. Instead, he doesn't really, you know, fully know why it's happening, but he doesn't doubt God for a moment. He says, God's will be done, and I'm content with that. So notice what happens next in verse 27. The king said also unto Zadok the priest, art not thou a seer, meaning a prophet? Return into the city in peace, and your two sons with you, Ahimaaz thy son, and Jonathan the son of Abiathar. So he wants specifically for Zadok and his son and Abiathar and his son, so four men, to go back into the city of Jerusalem. And he says, see, I will tarry in the plain of the wilderness until there come word from you to certify me. Zadok, therefore, and Abiathar carried the ark of God again to Jerusalem, and they tarried there. So he says, you take the ark back to the city, but you stay there, and you find out what's going on and get word to me. So again, David needs information. He's not able to have it exactly now, so he needs someone that he trusts to find out what's going on. Zadok is the priest, and so because of that, he'll have access to the city, and there's a very, you know, small likelihood that Absalom would try to overthrow the priesthood or to kill the priest. That would, you know, completely turn the people against him, at least at this point in time. Later in their history, not so much, but now they are still devoted to the priesthood. So Zadok is able to be there and to hear what's going on and to get word to David. So then verse 30 says, David went up by the ascent of Mount Olivet and wept as he went up and had his head covered, and he went barefoot. And all the people that was with him covered every man his head, and they went up weeping as they went up. So they've come out of the city, down through the valley of Kidron, and they're going up the Mount of Olives, and we get a picture of David. And he's not wearing shoes, and his head is covered, and there are tears flowing from his eyes. He's weeping as he climbs the Mount of Olives. And all the people have their heads covered, and they are weeping as well. This is not a moment of joy for the nation of Israel. It's a time of terrible sorrow and humiliation for their king and for those who are loyal to him. The question becomes, if God is in control, why is he allowing this happen to the man he chose to be king? Why is God allowing these things to occur? And that's the question that we always ask. We wonder so many times in our world why these things happen and what is God's plan and his purpose. They didn't know the answer to that. But the thing that they trusted in, that David trusted in, was God. That God is righteous and he is just and he has a plan and a purpose. And so David is just going to trust in God. That doesn't mean that he enjoyed the trial. He's crying, weeping tears as he's humiliated, walking up this hill away from Jerusalem. But he knows in his heart that God's going to take care of everything. So it's a picture here of how we deal with the difficulties of life. Do we suffer? Yes. Does it cause us to weep and to feel bad and to be sad? Of course it does. But in the midst of the suffering and the heartbreak and the heartache, we must never lose our faith in God. That even when we don't understand why things are happening the way they are, or what's going on, or what the future will hold, God is true. And he's going to be true to his word and to his purpose. And our job, just like David, is to trust in him. And if God delights in us, David says he'll bring me back. If not, then whatever he wants to do, that's what we'll do. He trusted in God completely. That doesn't mean he was happy in the situation, but he still had his joy. He still had his peace that everything was going to be okay. In the moment, it was heartbreaking, but he knew that God is going to be true. And we're going to see that as we come to the end of this passage. So verse 31 then tells us that one told David, saying, Ahithophel is among the conspirators with Absalom. And David said, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. So try to put yourself in David's shoes. He woke up this morning and word came to him that his son that he had forgiven, that he had accepted back, you know, into his family and into his kingdom, has been plotting against him for over 4 years and now has led a coup against him, and he's coming to depose him and to destroy him. So David, not planning that when he woke up this morning, he has to leave the city and has to flee for his life and take his family and his followers with him. And so he's leaving the city, and as he's traveling along, now he finds out that his closest counselor, Ahithophel, his trusted friend, has been in on this from the beginning as well, that he's one of the conspirators, that he has betrayed David. Listen to what David wrote in Psalm 55 about Ahithophel and about his betrayal. He said in verse number 12, "For it was not an enemy that reproached me, then I could have borne it. Neither was it he that hated me that did magnify himself against me. Then I would have hid myself from him. But it was thou, a man mine equal, my guide and mine acquaintance. We took sweet counsel together and walked unto the house of God in company." David says, if it had been someone who hated me, someone who was my enemy, and they did this to me, it wouldn't hurt, because I would expect it from them. But it was my friend. It was not just a friend, but it was a counselor. It was a man who I trusted implicitly, a man that David has spent many hours and many conversations with about the wisdom of leading the nation of Israel. This was a man who trusted in God, that David had walked with him to the house of God to worship, and now he has conspired against David to overthrow him. A couple things to remember about this. One is that Ahithophel was the grandfather of Bathsheba, and maybe that had something to do with his being willing to betray David the way that he did. The Bible never tells us that that was his motive, but it's something to think about. And the other thing to remember is that, and we're going to see this a little later on when we get to the end of Ahithophel's story, but he becomes a type in the Old Testament of Judas in the New Testament. Just as Judas betrayed Jesus, Ahithophel betrayed David. One who was close to him, a true friend, turned against him. So David has the heartbreak of his son turning against him, and now the heartbreak of this man who had been a friend and a confidant and a counselor for years in David's time, you know, becoming king and serving as king, that he's rejected David as well. So again, David's low, and now he's brought even lower, but he doesn't lose his faith in God. He says, and he asks here, prays to God, O Lord, I pray thee, turn the counsel of Ahithophel into foolishness. We're told later in the scriptures that when Ahithophel gave counsel, it was like asking counsel of God himself, that he had that kind of wisdom, that when he spoke, you knew that he was telling you the wisest thing to do. And David recognizes, number one, that he's going to be a formidable foe, and that if he counsels Absalom, they're in trouble because Ahithophel is a wise man. So he prays for God to turn his counsel to foolishness. But also, and what's really behind this, is that David understands that Ahithophel is going against God's anointed. He's chosen the rebel over the one that God had chosen. And so he wants his counsel turned to foolishness so that God's purpose won't be defeated. And David didn't know it, but God was already working to answer this prayer. And we read about that in verse 32. It says, "It came to pass that when David was come to the top of the mount where he worshiped God," and notice that in the midst of all of this heartache and sorrow and everything that he's going through, when David made it to the top of the mountain, he worshiped God. So he stopped and paused to honor God, even in the midst of all this. "Behold, Hushai, the Archite, came to meet him with his coat rent and earth upon his head. Unto whom David said, If thou passest on with me, then thou shalt be a burden unto me. But if thou return to the city and say unto Absalom, I will be thy servant, O king, as I have been thy father's servant hitherto, so will I now also be thy servant. Then mayest thou for me defeat the counsel of Ahithophel. And hast thou not there with thee Zadok and Abiathar the priests? Therefore it shall be that what things soever thou shalt hear out of the king's house, thou shalt tell it to Zadok and Abiathar the priests. Behold, they have there with them their two sons, Ahimaaz, Zadok's son, and Jonathan, Abiathar's son. And by them ye shall send unto me everything ye can hear." So Hushai, David's friend, came into the city, and Absalom came into Jerusalem. So David wanted the wisdom of Ahithophel to be turned to foolishness. And just at that time, God sent Hushai to David. And so he also is a counselor, and he'd been a servant of David. David says, "Go to Jerusalem and tell Absalom that you're going to serve him. And whatever you find out from Absalom, you tell to the sons of the priest, and they'll get word to me so I can know what's going on." So this is the circle's complete in David's spy ring. They're going to be able to find out and to let David know what is happening. And more than that, God is going to use Hushai to do exactly what David prayed for, to take the counsel of Ahithophel and to turn it on its head. And that's part of the story that we'll get to, Lord willing, next time. So David prayed this prayer. And notice, and I meant to mention this, but it's important to consider that David didn't pray, you know, "Ahithophel betrayed me. I wish God would strike him dead." It wasn't a prayer of vengeance. It wasn't that he wished harm on him, even though he'd become his enemy. He just wanted him not to counsel Absalom to do something that was against the will of God. So here's David, this mighty king and this mighty warrior, you know, who knows his way around a battlefield, yet he's not seeking vengeance at all in any of these situations. He only is seeking for God's will to be done. And that demonstrates tremendous character in spite of what the commentators try to tell us about David. When we come to chapter 16, we're going to read through this quickly here. We'll talk about a couple of David's enemies who show their true colors when this happens. You know, we hear the phrase sometimes about kicking someone when they're down. Well, when this happens to David and these individuals think that he's not going to be king anymore, they see it as the opportunity to tell him what they really think of him. And they're just going to try to add to his burden. So as we think about this, you know, we need to keep in mind the big picture that we're seeing characteristics of people in our lives and in our worlds. There are some who are faithful and loyal to us, some who are true friends, some that we can trust, you know, to be our spies on the inside. And then there are those who have acted like our friends, but the moment we're in trouble, their true colors show. And that's what happens with Ziba in verse 1 of chapter 16. When David was a little past the top of the hill, behold, Ziba, the servant of Mephibosheth, met him with a couple of asses saddled, and upon them 200 loaves of bread and 100 bundles of raisins, or bunches of raisins, and 100 of summer fruits and a bottle of wine. And the king said unto Ziba, "What meanest thou by these?" And Ziba said, "The asses be for the king's household to ride on, and the bread and summer fruit for the young men to eat, and the wine that such as be faint in the wilderness may drink." And this sounds like a wonderful thing. Ziba knows they're going to need means to travel. They're going to need food and drink while they're in hiding, and so he's brought it to them. What a kind gesture. But it goes on. Verse 3, the king said, "And where is thy master's son?" Now, you remember Mephibosheth was the son of Jonathan, the grandson of King Saul. And David wanted to do good for the descendants of Saul. And so Mephibosheth was lame, and they found out where he was and brought him into his house, the palace. And he said, "You know, from this day forward, you're going to eat at my table." And he'd taken care of Mephibosheth for all this time. So he asked Ziba, who was the servant of Mephibosheth, where is he? And Ziba said unto the king, "Behold, he abideth at Jerusalem, for he said, today shall the house of Israel restore me the kingdom of my father." Then said the king to Ziba, "Behold, thine are all that pertained unto Mephibosheth." And Ziba said, "I humbly beseech thee that I may find grace in thy sight, my lord, O king." So Ziba's words seem, he's saying all the right things. "I want to find grace in your sight. I'm doing this good thing for you, giving you food and drink and the animals to ride." And the problem is that he's lying about Mephibosheth. He's telling David that Mephibosheth is part of the rebellion against him, that he said, "Now the kingdom's going to be restored to my family's name." And Mephibosheth hadn't done that. And we're going to find out at the end of the story, when we see Mephibosheth again, that he had remained loyal to David and had been left behind in Jerusalem. He couldn't walk. He was lame, and no one would help him leave. But nevertheless, Ziba is lying about his master because he wants the inheritance of Mephibosheth for himself, and probably always did. But his true colors are showing now. He sees this opportunity. So he takes this lie that he's going to present to David, and he wraps it up in this pretty package of food and drink and animals to ride and saying kind words. And all of that is to cover the rotten lie at the core. So his character is truly revealed, and it reminds us that when we're down and we're in trouble, there are going to be those who use it as an opportunity just to make things worse for their own benefit. So verse 5, when the king came to Bahurim, behold, there came out a man of the family of the house of Saul, whose name was Shimei, the son of Gera. He came forth and cursed still as he came. And he cast stones at David and at all the servants of King David, and all the people and all the mighty men were on his right hand and on his left. And thus said Shimei when he cursed, come out, thou bloody man, and thou man of Belial. The Lord hath returned upon thee all the blood of the house of Saul, in whose stead thou hast reigned. And the Lord hath delivered the kingdom into the hand of Absalom thy son. And behold, thou art taken in thy mischief, because thou art a bloody man. So Shimei sees it as an opportunity. Now, he would never have come to David's house, the palace, and have said this to his face when David was king, when David was reigning on the throne. But now that he thinks David's in trouble, he has the opportunity to speak his mind. And he hurls these accusations at David. And for whatever reason, Shimei didn't know the truth. He didn't understand how good David had been to the descendants of Saul, that he had protected Mephibosheth and others, and the good that he had done. Most kings in that time would have, you know, slaughtered the entire family in order to remove any threats to the throne. David hadn't done that. He'd been good to Saul in his life and also to his descendants. But Shimei has, you know, heard what other people have told him or whatever. He hasn't sought out the truth, and now he's cursing God's king. Verse 9 says, then said Abishai, the son of Zeruiah, unto the king, why should this dead dog curse my lord the king? Let me go over, I pray thee, and take off his head, which is one of my favorite statements in the whole story. Let me just go take off his head. Okay, go ahead. But he didn't. Listen to what David says. The king said, what have I to do with you, ye sons of Zeruiah? So let him curse, because the Lord hath said unto him, curse David. Who shall then say, wherefore hast thou done so? And David said to Abishai and to all his servants, behold, my son, which came forth of my bowels, seeketh my life. How much more now may this Benjamite do it? Let him alone and let him curse, for the Lord hath bidden him. It may be that the Lord will look on mine affliction, and that the Lord will requite me good for his cursing this day. So David says, let him say what he wants to say. His attitude is, these are just words, and words can't hurt. Now, he's throwing rocks, but David's in the middle of, 600 mighty men. He's not getting hit by rocks. But he's saying they're just words. And he feels like this is what needs to be said, so let him say it. When David says that, the Lord told him to curse, it doesn't mean that God actually spoke to him and told him to say these things. But David says he thinks that what he's saying is the right thing and that it's pleasing to the Lord, so let him say it. God will be the judge. He says maybe God will look on my affliction and he will requite me. And of course he will eventually. But this again is the attitude of David. Even though he's king of Israel, it's not for him to seek vengeance against people who don't like him as king or don't approve of his rule or decisions that he's made. He leaves it all in the hands of God. And it's one thing to do that when you're in power. It's another thing to do that when you're brought as low as David is, when you have all this pressure on you and it would be a show of strength, to fight off this enemy who's saying these things against you. But David doesn't. He remains peaceful and he doesn't fight back because his trust is completely in God. So verse 13 says, as David and his men went by the way, Shimei went along on the hillside over against him and cursed as he went and threw stones at him and cast dust. And the king and all the people that were with him came weary and refreshed themselves there. And so they finally have made it to a place where they can rest for the evening. So David started out, none of this had happened. He found out that Absalom has rebelled. He has to leave the city. Then he finds out Ahithophel is part of the conspiracy. Now he has these peasants, if you will, hurling these accusations at him and deceiving him and throwing stones at him. And all of this comes on him at once. And throughout it all, David has remained not only strong in character and integrity, but he's remained true and faithful to God. And I want us to close by reading from Psalm number 4. Psalms 3 and 4 go together, and they tell us about what was in David's heart as he was fleeing from Absalom. In fact, in Psalm 3, we'll just read here verse 1. David says, Lord, how are they increased that trouble me? Many are they that rise up against me. Many there be which say of my soul, there is no help for him in God. But thou, O Lord, art a shield for me, my glory and the lifter up of mine head. I cried unto the Lord with my voice, and he heard me out of his holy hill. I laid me down and slept. I awaked, for the Lord sustained me. I will not be afraid of 10,000s of people that have set themselves against me round about. Arise, O Lord, save me, O my God, for thou hast smitten all mine enemies upon the cheekbone. Thou hast broken the teeth of the ungodly. Salvation belongeth unto the Lord. Thy blessing is upon thy people. Notice that he says, I laid me down and slept, and then I awoke. David and his company have made it to this place for this first night where they can sleep. Can you imagine trying to go to sleep that night after everything that's happened and how uncertain the future is? And David said, I laid down and went to sleep. And God woke me up the next morning because God is God. He sustained me. He is good and he is faithful. And he knew that God was going to take care of this. And then in Psalm 4, he says, hear me when I call, O God of my righteousness. Thou hast enlarged me when I was in distress. Have mercy upon me and hear my prayer. O ye sons of men, how long will you turn my glory into shame? How long will you love vanity and seek after leasing? But know that the Lord hath set apart him that is godly for himself. The Lord will hear when I call unto him. Stand in awe and sin not. Commune with your own heart upon your bed and be still. Offer the sacrifices of righteousness and put your trust in the Lord. There be many that say, who will show us any good? Lord, lift thou up the light of thy countenance upon us. Thou hast put gladness in my heart more than in the time that their corn and their wine increased. I will both lay me down in peace and sleep, for thou, Lord, only makest me dwell in safety. David was not afraid. He wasn't afraid to be where he was. He wasn't afraid to go to sleep at night because he knew that God was going to take care of him. In fact, he says, there's gladness in my heart now more than when I was in prosperity, because David had complete and total trust in God. This is not a man who thought that God hated him and was punishing him. This is a man who knew that bad things were happening, but God is faithful and true. And David was well aware of his mistakes and his sins, but he also was aware of the forgiveness and the grace and the mercy of God. And so he knew he'd made those things right, and now he's focused on serving God. And even if that meant he had to go through this time of testing and trial, he's not going to give up his faith in God. So he had no fear. He did what he had to do, but he did it with complete and total trust in God. And that's a lesson that we all need to learn. We all face tests and trials and obstacles and difficulties in life, but God is always faithful. He's always true to his word, and if we'll remain faithful and true to him, we can be assured and just as confident and just as glad and joyful as David is. Even with tears in our eyes, we can still have joy in our heart because we have a God on our side who will give us the victory and help us to overcome our enemies, whoever they may be, even the greatest enemy of all, which is Satan. We have the assurance of that victory through Christ, and I hope that all of us here this evening do have that assurance. But if not, if there's something in your life that has separated you from God and from that hope that is in him and that trust that is in him, I hope that you'll take this opportunity to make it right with him. Have your sins forgiven, either by obeying the gospel to become a Christian through faith in Jesus, repentance of sin, confession of the name of Christ, and baptism for the remission of sins, or a child of God who needs to come back home through repentance of sin, confession, and prayer. Whatever your need is, we'll help you to do that so you can be right with God, trust in him, and know that he'll see you through with victory all the way to the end. If we can help in any way, let it be known by coming forward. Respond even now as we stand and as we sing.